what I'm going to try to do today is to share with you the knowledge that we have gained from multiple birth cohort studies investigating the different phenotypes of asthma. No disclosures of interest. So it is really interesting to know what is really phenotype means, but and I decided to go after an official dictionary definition, and it says that the phenotype is a set of observable characteristics of an individual resulting from interaction of its genotype with the environment. And it further says that the phenotype results from the expression of the genes of an organism, and this organism can be a plant or an insect or a human, as well as the influence of the environmental factors and random variation. So at the end of the day, the phenotype is a compilation of interactions between different genotypes, environment, and random variation. Early on, since we knew asthma, we always tried to give some terms and terminologies for their asthma. And for the last century, we were very happy with this terminology, the extrinsic versus intrinsic asthma. However, there are a lot of other terminologies that we use for asthma, like transient versus persistent, mild versus severe, childhood versus adult onset, seasonal versus perennial. And when we got really deep in the inflammatory process of asthma, we start speaking about eosinophilic versus neutrophilic asthma. And then we started to give specific terminologies for asthma, for specific types of asthma, like occupational asthma, exercise-induced asthma, and aspirin-sensitive asthma. Now, it's very important to say here that over the last few years, there were a lot of methodologies that came out, and the main aim of these methodologies are to help us to interpret our data towards the development of descriptions of what looks like phenotypes for wheezing and asthma. There are multiple methodologies, and these methodologies, they look very dissimilar, but they are really similar to each other. And one of these similar the methodology is really very interesting, which is the trajectory methodology. The importance of the trajectory methodology, it doesn't tell you exactly where you are now only, but it tells you where are you going to be in the future also, which is really very important in a chronic disease like asthma. Now, the first attempt to describe early childhood wheezing phenotypes came from this group, from Dr. Fernando Martinez and his group in University of Arizona. And they did this first publication about 20 years ago. And they based this on a birth cohort study, and the number of the subjects in this birth cohort, they were just below 1,000. And they were able to find four main phenotypes. They found that 50% of their birth cohort study did not have any type of wheezing at all. And around 20% had an early onset wheeze. That means that those patients start wheezing early on, before the age of 3 years. However, at about the age of 3 years, they stop wheezing and the wheezing never recurs. And then we have around 15% of the birth cohort had a late onset wheeze. They don't start early, they start wheezing around the age of 3 years and they continue to wheeze through the age of 6 years. And then the last group and the smallest group is the 13.7% early onset persistent wheezers. And those start early wheezing and they continue to wheeze all through the time, across the 3 year and the 6 year time periods. So this phenotype was really very famous and very popular, and a lot of investigators use it actually while they're investigating early childhood wheezing. However, over the last few years, there were a lot of classical papers giving us phenotypes about childhood asthma and childhood wheezing depending on birth cohort studies. And one of them is this from UK by Henderson and his group. And they called it the ALSPAC study. And ALSPAC stands for Avon Longitudinal Study of Parents and Children. So this is a birth cohort study. And what they've done, they collected data, symptom data, that was collected at 7 time points from birth to age of 7 years. And there were quite a number in this cohort, around 6,000. Not only that, they were able also to do some objective measurements of airway responsiveness and airflow rates mainly between the age of 7 and 9 years. And also, they were able to establish the atopic status of those children. And they used one of those methodologies that I talked about, the latent class analysis, to come up with a pattern of wheezing. And based on that, they were able to identify 6 phenotypes. And the summary of those 6 phenotypes, that atopy, as one of the most important milestones towards the development of childhood asthma, was strongly associated with 2 types of phenotype. It's called the intermediate onset wheezing and the late onset wheezing. Now, those are the 6 wheezing phenotypes. And I'm sorry, the figure really looks terrible, but I'm going to go or walk with you through it. So the y-axis looks at the probability of wheezing, and the x-axis looks at the age. And the green line here represents those children in the birth cohort that never wheezed at all. They did not wheeze at any stage. And the red line represents the kids who started wheezing early and persistently wheezed all through the time. And then we have a group. The blue ones are transient wheezers. They start wheezing at one time and either stop at the age of 3 or at the age of 6, and they never wheeze again. And then we have the intermediate onset and the late onset wheezers. Those, they start wheezing at a point either before 3 or after the age of 3 and continue wheezing all the time. And both of these groups, the intermediate onset and the late onset persistent wheezers, those are the ones that atopy was found to be a crucial element in the development of wheezing later on. It is strange that atopy was not really, you know, found to be a crucial element for the development of wheezing later on in the case of the persistent wheezers. It was there, but it was not really crucial enough to do this. So this table gives us the summary of the ALSPAC study. And what it says, it shows asthma present in all phenotypes, asthma as, you know, the clinical syndrome that we know it. But it was mostly apparent in the intermediate and late onset wheezers and the persistent wheezers. Atopy, as I mentioned to you, with these 2 phenotypes, it was there for the persistent wheezing, but it was not enough to predict wheezing later on. Lung function was decreased in the intermediate onset and the persistent wheezing. And the airway hyperresponsiveness was apparent in the 3 of these. Now, another birth cohort studies came from Netherlands. It's called the PIAMA study. And PIAMA stands for the Prevention and Incidence of Asthma and Mite Allergy. And it is a birth cohort study. And they were able to come up with 5 phenotypes that are extremely similar to the ALSPAC study. And these are the phenotypes. Again, the one in the bottom never wheezed. The one on the top wheezed all the time since early. And then we have the transient wheezer, started wheezing and then stopped wheezing completely at around the age of 6. And then we have the early or the late onset wheezers, started wheezing at one point and continued on. It looks very much like the ALSPAC birth cohort study. But what is very interesting in the PIAMA study that they were able to come up with different risk factors that can predict the phenotype. For example, in the case of the transient early wheeze, they found that most of those children who were male had parental allergy, exposed to tobacco smoke, low maternal age or high maternal BMI, or had a daycare exposure or siblings. Those are the factors that predicted this phenotype. In the case of persistent wheezing, again, a boy, parental allergy, and breastfeeding for less than 12 weeks. And they found also that low birth weight predicted the intermediate onset wheeze, and maternal allergy predicted the late onset wheeze. Now, this doesn't mean that these risk factors are applicable to similar phenotypes that are coming from birth cohort studies. The important question here is, if we can alter these risk factors, can we change the phenotype destiny? For example, if you change, for example, tobacco smoke exposure, or if you improve the breastfeeding duration, would that really affect the outcome of the phenotype or not? But there are things that you cannot change, for example, parental atopic status or the gender. So putting the onset of wheezing and the history of wheezing aside, the Manchester Asthma Allergy Study, who originated in Manchester, UK, did an analysis of timing and type of sensitization of specific allergens in relation to phenotype of asthma. And the wisdom behind this, that again, atopy is considered one of the most important factors and milestones towards the development of asthma in children. And they were able to come up with the five-class model of atopic vulnerability. So there are around 60% of the children in this birth cohort studied never had any signs of atopy. And then there's 10% with multiple early sensitization, 16% with multiple late sensitization, around 5% had allergy to dust mite, and around 10% have allergy to antigens other than the dust mite. And one of the outcomes that they looked at, actually, is the risk of hospital admission with acute wheezing or acute asthma attack. And what they found, that this line, which represents the red line, this is represent the multiple early sensitization. Those are the patients with multiple early sensitization that had the highest risk for the development of acute wheezing episode or acute asthma attacks leading to hospitalization. In the case of multiple late sensitization, which you would think is very much like the multiple early sensitization, it was not different from those patients who did not have any type of atopy, which is strange enough. And then the dust mite issue was in the middle. So again, atopy is important towards the development of asthma in children. And not only that, it also can dictate the severity of this asthma based on this outcome. Also in the Manchester study, they looked at lung functions. They looked specifically at the specific airway resistance, which was assessed at the ages of 3, 5, 8, and 11 years. And based on the assignment of those children, whether in the 4 wheezing phenotypes or in the 5 atopic phenotypes, they did their analysis. And what they found, that the children with persistent wheeze had a significant greater rate of deterioration in specific airway resistance with time. And the children with multiple early atopy phenotype had poorer lung function in general. And here is the data. So on the y-axis, you have the specific airway resistance, and then the x-axis, you have the age in years. And the solid line represent boys, and the dotted line represent girls. Now, the red line here represents the children who had multiple early sensitization and had persistent asthma. And those are the ones that had continuously over time worsening of their specific airway resistance compared to the other group. Now, the Manchester study collaborated with another birth cohort study from Australia. It's called the Isle of Wight cohort. And through their collaboration, they wanted to study the influence of atopy in this combined two-birth cohort. And they did a machine learning approach to cluster the children based on the skin test and the specific IgE. So combining two-birth cohorts from totally different countries, developed at two different times, is really gives this analysis a huge strength. And they were able to create five-class solution that is best for both cohorts. And what they found, that the children who are sensitized to a wide variety of allergens had more asthma, had poorer lung function, had greater airway activity, highest exhaled NO indicating inflammation, and most hospital admission. So again, this is the analogy is repeating itself, atopy, persistent asthma, and worse disease over time, and worse lung function. Another study that was done, this is a birth cohort study that was done in the States in Wayne County in Detroit, Michigan. It's called the Wayne County Health Environment Allergy and Asthma Longitudinal Study. There were around 600 children who, for whom a specific IgE and IgE status was done at the age of 2 years, and they looked at outcomes at the age of 4 years. And the model that best fit those children, they found that either there is no sensitization in about 75% of the cases, In 15% of the cases, there was just milk and egg that was documented. In 5%, peanut and other inhalant allergies. And in a very tiny small group, 2.7%, the highly sensitized group, multiple allergies and very high IgE levels. And though small group, this is the highly sensitized group that was significantly associated with doctor-diagnosed asthma after the age of 4 years. So where do we go from here? So as you go and review the literature about different birth cohort studies, you will end up seeing more and more birth cohort studies looking at other environmental factor input and vitamin D and obesity and you name it. And you go on and on and on. But I think the most important question is this question. What is really the long-term outcomes for those children, not only during childhood, but during adulthood? And this study tried to answer this question, the outcomes of childhood asthma at the age of 50 years. So this is the Melbourne Asthma Study that was established in 1964 in Australia. And the subjects were recruited at 7 years of age, so those were not actually birth cohort studies. And they were followed up till the age of 50. And at the age of 50, they tried to answer this question. Are the children in remission from their asthma, or do they still have asthma? And they divided the children into these five groups. Either controls who never had asthma or wheezing, had mild wheezy bronchitis or wheezy bronchitis. And you know, in the late 60s and early 70s, this terminology, wheezy bronchitis, was very common. Doctor did not want to call them asthmatics. They are actually asthmatics, but at that time, nobody really dared to call them asthmatics. And then the fourth group is persistent asthma, and the last one is severe asthma. And then in the case of severe asthma, they had to add few subjects at the age of 10 years because they were not enough at the age of 7 years. And what they found that around 65% of the patients with wheezing bronchitis went into remission. That is 35% of those patients continued to wheeze at the age of 50. In the case of persistent asthma, half of them relapsed and the other half continued to have signs and symptoms of asthma. And in the case of severe asthma, 15% only went to remission. That is 85% of those patients continued to have problems with asthma at the age of 50. So this is another study. It's a longitudinal cohort study that is not birth cohort, done in USA. And they followed the subject till the age of 26 years. And they looked at different six phenotypes that were identified at the start of the study at the age of 9 years. And the outcome that they tried to look at is lung function, and in addition to several other outcomes at different time points. Now, the six phenotypes are very similar to the previous phenotypes, but I'm going just to give you an idea. The first phenotype is persistent wheezing. They were at time of inclusion to the study. They were wheezing and continued wheezing all through the time of evaluations. And then the persistent wheezing form, in which at time of recruitment they did not wheeze. However, later on they start wheezing and continued wheezing all through. In the case of remission, they started wheezing and after 2 time points of evaluation they stopped completely. And in the case of relapse, they started wheezing and then they stopped wheezing in at least 2 time points of evaluation, and then they start wheezing again. And the transient wheezing, the intermittent wheezing, just, you know, unpredictable way, periods of remissions and relapses all through. And the transient wheezers are just the ones who were wheezing at just 1 time point and then they stopped completely wheezing. And of course, they looked at lung function at the age of 26, and what they found that the patients, they looked in the y-axis. They're looking at the FEV1-FVC ratio against age in the x-axis, and the patient with the persistent wheezing phenotype or relapsing phenotype had the significant drop in their lung function compared to the other groups at the age of 26 years. So the question comes, when did this happen? When did this drop in their lung function really start? And you would expect that it started to happen during teenage years or late teenage years. But actually, as you track behind their lung function, you can see that their lung function were actually down all through since recruitment. So you would think that those patients dropped from the curve at one time. Actually, they were not on the curve at any stage. And you would expect, actually, that if you go to preschool years or even early late infancy, that they probably had a lower lung function with the start of their symptoms. Lastly, I'm going to share with you this study. This is a prospective longitudinal study from New Zealand. It is what they've done in this study is they tried to construct a multi-locus profile of genetic predisposition to asthma. And then they did genotyping for the score in an unselected cohort followed from birth to midlife. And what the source of the data was actually the Dunedin Multidisciplinary Health and Development Study, which is a birth cohort study. The number was around 1,000 children to start with, and half of them were males. They were born in 1972 to 1973, and the eligibility to be in this study was on the basis of residence only. So this is an unselected cohort. In addition to participating in the follow-up assessment starting from the age of 3 years. And the follow-up went on till the age of 38 years. And the outcome that they would like to obtain actually is the impact of genetic risk score on asthma outcomes in adulthood. So they did analysis mainly for Caucasian children. The reason why, because those are the majority of the patients, around 871 of the 1,000 were Caucasians. And what they found that around 35% of this cohort at the age of 38 years had an ever physician-diagnosed asthma at any stage. That means that 65% of this cohort never had asthma at any stage. And then they found that around 27% had asthma and evidence of atopy. And all of them, of course, are within the ever asthma diagnosis. And then when they looked for airway hyperresponsiveness, they found around 18% of the children or of the adults had asthma and airway hyperresponsiveness. And virtually, as you can see, most of those subjects are within the asthma atopy status. And when they did further analysis, they found that 90% of this group actually were atopic. And lastly, when they tried to look at lung function. And the lung function here, they defined it as abnormal. If the post-bronchodilator FEV1-FVC ratio was more than 2 standard deviation below the mean for normal subjects. And what they found that 8.7% had incompletely reversible airflow. So what does that mean? It means that, again, that same slogan that I started with, that atopy is really an important risk factor for development of asthma. Atopy is an important, is an important milestone towards the development of asthma. And for persistent asthma, and for bad asthma, and for asthma with significant drop in lung function. So in conclusion, early transient wheeze is common, but not associated with atopy and is a transient. And for you who are practicing physicians, seeing children, pediatrician, and pediatric pulmonologists, this is probably the most common patients you see in your office, basically. Those patients coming with transient wheezing, they don't have any signs of atopy, and all of them are going to stop wheezing at one stage or another. And then we have the intermediate onset wheeze. Those are commonly atopic, and they are distant to persistently wheeze over a very, very long time. In terms of atopy, atopy is a huge, important, crucial element for the development of asthma, but the highly sensitized children who tend to develop very high IgEs early on and have multiple antigen sensitivities early on are the ones that are more likely to have persistent asthma over a very long time. And again, atopy is a key driver for the persistence of childhood asthma into adulthood, and of associated chronic airflow obstruction. I'll stop here, and thank you very much for your kind attention.